Those are conditions, circuitry in the brain that we have to do well in life. We cannot do school, we don't parent well, we don't teach well, if we don't feel safe in our environments and if we don't feel connected to one another.
Welcome to the Society's Child podcast, where we have real conversations about being a trauma-responsive educator in the midst of a significant mental health crisis. Hi, I'm Trish Senzak, a former educator, compassion advocate, and Jesus lover, and I'm so grateful that you're here. Are you feeling confuzzled about your students' behavior and needs? You're not alone. If trauma-informed strategies leave you wondering, what's next? Don't worry. My friend, I've been there too. As a foster mom and a child of complex trauma mixed with my experience as a teacher, it's led me to finding a compassionate, whole child approach that's evidence-based, practical, and transformational, and I'm so eager to share it with you. Whether you want to connect with your students on a deeper level, create a trauma-sensitive environment, or you just need a little bit of encouragement or support, you're in the right place. So grab a drink, a pen, or your earbuds, and let's work together to create a safe and student-attuned, trauma-responsive school culture. Society's children need you. So let's get started. Hey friends, I am so excited today because I have a brilliant guest with me that I get to introduce you to. I want you to meet Dr. Lori DeSottles. She has just fascinated me, and I love the work that she's doing. She's been an assistant professor at Butler University since 2016, where she teaches both undergraduate and graduate programs in the College of Education. Lori was also an assistant professor at Marion University in Indianapolis for 8 years, where she founded the Educational Neuroscience Symposium that's now reached thousands of educators in its 10th year. Lori's passion is engaging her students through the social and relational neurosciences, all of it as it applies to education, by integrating her Applied Educational Neuroscience Framework and its learning principles and practices that she puts into her coursework at Butler. So those who learn from her are privileged to be working and learning her framework. I'm excited because she is bringing us great down-to-earth content that we can actually use in our classroom. This is only the first part of the interview because there was such good wisdom and good nuggets in there. I broke it into two parts so that it's easily digestible and that you'll be able to break it down. So I hope you take great notes. So let's get right to it. Here's Dr. Lori DeSottles. Well, thank you for taking the time to join us today. I really appreciate you being here. And so I really wanted to just kind of jump in and see if you can share a little bit with us, based on your research and your experiences, more about, I've been talking to my audience about felt safety, co-regulation, and connection. And so from your perspective as someone who is not only an educator, but a researcher and working with Dr. Porges, I thought you would be a great person to kind of share some basic information on that and kind of get us started on what you think is important for educators to know.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Trish. And I think that I would love to start out with talking about survival states, because our nervous system is a hierarchy of different autonomic nervous system states. So in a way that we teach educators and the way that we teach children and parents is to make really strong connections with your own ANDs. And AND stands for your autonomic nervous system. And when you are good friends with your autonomic nervous system, you can listen to what you need because your nervous system is always talking to you. And you can really support your own nervous system through practices that are really easy and accessible. So we have a brain that is wired for survival before anything else. And so survival is when we can experience an environment, or we experience relationships, or we might experience conditions to feel threatening or to feel unsafe or to feel even unfamiliar. And that can begin to, that's where all of our energy moves to, is into that survival. Traditionally, we know that as a fight flight state, or as a freeze or a shutdown and an immobilized state. And those are very uncomfortable states for us as people. They don't feel safe to us. We feel alone sometimes, and we feel just a lot of maybe edginess, irritation, worry, panic attacks live there, anger outbursts live there. I mean, just a lot of emotion that sometimes gets stuck in survival, and we're not able to work through it or digest it or metabolize it. So we have to understand that underneath our behaviors and underneath our feelings is a system, our nervous system, that is always working for us and not against us. And that is hopeful.
Absolutely. I love that because I can almost picture myself in a classroom being in a situation where something happens. I can remember a child having a diabetic reaction, or I can have it remember a child throwing a fit and slamming the door or something like that. And I can remember myself just being very on edge or a lot of emotions coming up for me. So that makes complete sense where I'd want to run, I'd want to scream, I'd want to respond back and completely react. So in knowing the survival state situation and all of that information that we as educators have, how do we go about creating a sense of felt safety for the classroom that might be experiencing this, or myself as an educator who is also in this and all of a sudden on the spot to take some action in that moment?
Well, the greatest intervention that any of us can give to our students in those moments where everything feels fast and unpredictable and chaotic is to do our own work. We've got to pay attention to our own nervous system. When I notice that my heart is beating fast, when I notice that my hands are clammy or sweaty, when I notice that I can't get a deep breath, that is my nervous system telling me that I am not really able to access logic or words, and this is not the time to discipline in this moment. So, and that's something that, it's a process. So if you, when we're teaching and you have 30 students in front of you, and 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 are starting to move into survival too. You've got an angry student, you have a shutdown student, you have a lot. It's very important at that point to really check in with yourself. And but that's the hardest thing to do in survival, because we want to fix it. We want a solution. We want to, but our children on and our adolescents are always watching us. And we forget that. They are watching our faces, they're listening to our tone. They're watching how we posture and how we gesture. And so I know in my own family, with my own children, my children know when I am dysregulated because my voice goes up high, or my face will look very, just I'll have a different look. I'm not smiling with my eyes. So one of the things that we encourage educators is to really get out in front of your own behavior. And what I mean by that is taking those 3 deep breaths in the car before the day begins, knowing ahead of time that you've got a huge day ahead of you. So how will you resource yourself? How will you, if there is a moment where you are dysregulated, do you have, 2 or 3 short practices, running your hands under warm water, holding your cheeks just, for a second, holding the back of your neck? There are things that we can do as we're walking through our classroom, and that can, giving ourselves a hand massage, grabbing a piece of chocolate, grabbing a mint. There are things we can do in the moment that can really help to ease the angst. And again, our students are watching us. So when we can step back, take a couple of deep breaths, and be real and authentic with our students and say, you know what? We're going to take a minute or two, and we're going to come back to this. And we use the language of the nervous system with our students. So my students know, I will say to them, I'm not in my cortex right now. And my amygdala, my fire alarm, my amygdala is firing. And my ANS is feeling fast and unsteady. And I need to take care of me, and you need to take care of you, and then we'll come back in 2 minutes together. So it's those are again, it's hard in a 30-minute podcast, but I want to say to your listeners today that the greatest literally gift we can give to our students and children and adolescents is to really take care of ourselves and to check in with our own nervous system.
I love
It has
that. And I love
contagion. It's contagious.
it is contagious. And I've often heard the more is caught than taught. And you picked up right on that and talking about how they will see and sense it, whether it's an eyebrow raise, our voice level raises, our tone of voice. And that's a beautiful thing, is our students get to know us as they're sitting there watching us day in and day out, right? So that's awesome. And I do believe, and have often spoke to my listeners about the fact that we need to do the self-reflection piece and really get to know how we're responding to these. So thank you for sharing that and kind of putting a cap on that for us. Can you define, please, for our listeners? I kind of did it in the previous podcast a little bit about felt safety from my perspective of a very, very rough version of it. But can you tell a little bit more in terms of what's happening scientifically and what we're, and I think I remember Dr. Porges talks about the we look inside, outside, and in relationship several times a second. And so I've really hung on to that and how we do that. So can you explain that a little bit more so that people can kind of understand it from a your own perspective and from a neuroscience perspective, please?
So I started speaking about survival. So when we think about how our brain develops, it develops from the very back to the front and from the inside out. And we have this beautiful, miraculous pathway called the vagus nerve that connects our bodies to our brains and our brains to our bodies. And so our nervous system is a very integrated system. And we're always perceiving our external environment. So we're looking outwards, we're looking inwards. We know when we have a stomach ache, we know when we feel a migraine coming on, and then we have a relational environment. And I believe that's what you're speaking to. And that relational environment is very important because we need each other. We are social, communal creatures. We can't survive without each other. And so when we think about the work of the polyvagal theory, it's very normal, and we want to celebrate how our nervous system is always moving through different states. So we have survival state, and then we have what we call, if you put your hands on your forehead, this is the prefrontal cortex. And when this part of the nervous system is getting a lot of strong oxygen glucose flow, then we are in what Dr. Porges calls the social engagement system. And that's where we feel safe. We feel connected to others. We feel curious. We feel grounded and steady. We feel creative. We can't always be here. And that's what I want to normalize, is that all day long, every day, our nervous system is responding and reacting to our environments, experiences, and relationships. That is something I think as educators, as a young teacher, I wish I had known that. I wish I had known that it was normal for me to tighten up and to feel tense when a student ran out of the room or turned over a chair or yelled out or just shut down completely, because emotions are so contagious. So that is the first principle of polyvagal, is to know that it is so celebratory and so normal to know that your body moves through this nervous system, that you have these beautiful states of action, you know, how we're responding to our environments in all moments. And that is a wonderful thing, because we have up here in the cortex, we have our story of connection. When we are in fight flight, that is our nervous system's story of protection. And then when we, in the brainstem, when we feel disconnected or we feel done over it, we feel sometimes hopeless, we feel overwhelmed. That is when the nervous system goes into kind of a immobilized shutdown. And that's normal too. I want to normalize that because that's when, as a teacher, you've had this horrendous day, you come home and your heart's beating fast, but you don't have enough energy to even make dinner. Or a student in your classroom who refuses to complete assignment, you ask them to come over and talk to you, they are at their desk, they don't move. We call those behaviors manipulative or disrespectful, but what might be happening is that student is, their little hearts are beating fast, but they are in a complete shutdown. So that's also when we see an immobilized shutdown freeze brainstem response, or what we call in polyvagal dorsal shutdown, is when also we see kids sleeping. There is, we see kids failing school, not completing assignments under their desk, hoods over their head. I want to make this real for teachers because we can talk about the science, but what does the science look like? So in our schools, fight flight gets punished more because those are behaviors that are externalizing pain. Like those are kids who are running or fighting, showing aggression. We have labels for that, don't we? We say oppositional, defiant. But that is fear underneath that anger. Then we have kids who internalize pain, and those are the immobilized shutdown. That's that brainstem where our nervous system is in disconnection. So those are the behaviors that we see, but it's really important to understand that felt safety, those are conditions, circuitry in the brain that we have to do well in life. We cannot do school. We don't parent well. We don't teach well if we don't feel safe in our environments and if we don't feel connected to one another. And those aren't warm, fuzzy, extra conditions. Those are actually circuits that form from the bottom of the brain up into the cortex, creating a pathway so that we can access social engagement and be in the cortex.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for that definition and explanation. It's really exciting to hear you kind of talk about how this is really something inside of us that is normal, because
It's normal.
we really have to start looking at this is how I like to say that the trauma-informed movement is really a human-informed movement, because all of us have these responses and
That's
reactions.
right.
It's just some of us have language and ability to be able to do something about it or be aware of about it. And a lot of people aren't in that stage or at that set in that situation to be able to do that yet, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if a kid is coming in and they have all this going on and they are showing that behavior, whether it's the hoodie over the head quiet or whether it's the kid that's out loud and getting the attention, they're dysregulated. So we can kind of define that as a dysregulation. Can you talk a little bit about the dysregulation and co-regulation that might need to happen? And this is a new term for my listeners because I've yet to talk about the co-regulation, but how that works to settle and how important that is to help a child who, whether they're dysregulated for trauma reasons or dysregulated for whatever else, and how important it is for us as adults and teachers to use this technique and to understand what it's good for.
So I'm going to define co-regulation first of all, because it's become a trendy word, and it also sometimes is misunderstood. And so when you think about co-regulation, it's our ability to share our safe, emotionally available nervous system with someone who needs to borrow a little of our calm or a little of our steadiness for a bit of time. And it is critical in helping children learn how to emotionally regulate their own nervous systems. And when you think about this, My daughter Reagan and I were talking about this today. Matt Lieberman's research, he talks about the needs, the human physiological needs. And we think of physiological needs as food or safety, or we can't live without food and water. But I want to say this today. If an infant has all this food around it, and yet there's no one to feed that baby, it's food is not that need, it's being fed. And so co-regulation is sharing our nervous systems and being present so that a child, an adolescent, maybe one of our colleagues is heard and seen and felt. And when we feel heard and seen and felt, then we can tap into our own strengths and autonomy. And so it is what Deb Dana says, it's our biological imperative. We don't survive without other people. That's why the pandemic was so hard on many families and children and youth, because not only was there a lot of unpredictability, but we were isolated for long periods of time, our children, especially as their nervous system was developing. So co-regulation is part of our biology. It is, and now what we understand is that it takes thousands of moments of co-regulation to be able to emotionally regulate. And I can say this in another way too. If you grow up in an environment and no one is kind to you, you don't develop the circuitry in the brain for kindness. These are like there are circuits, neural circuits for kindness. If you grow up in an environment and no one is ever putting themselves in each other's shoes, you don't know how to be empathetic. You don't know how to empathize. And it's true for emotional regulation. If you have not experienced a serve and return, a collaborative, trusting, predictable, consistent, and an emotionally available nervous system from a caregiver or an adult, you don't know how to emotionally regulate. It is a skill that is birthed after thousands of moments of having that patterned repetition.
I love how you mentioned co-regulation being something when we borrow someone else's calm. And then you had said earlier how that we all have these moments where, and it is normal for us to not be okay for a moment, as long as we're able to kind of work on doing that. And I think that co-regulation is a super cool thing that we can do, is borrow someone else's calm. How cool and interesting is that? And I love that image, and I'm going to walk away with that for sure.
I hope you enjoyed that interview today. That's only part one, and there's a lot more where that comes from next week. So be sure to tune in. If you want to find out more about her, go on over to Revelations in Education, and you can find out about all of the books that she's written. Be sure to check out the information about her newest book coming out, Body and Brain Brilliance, A Manual to Cultivate Awareness and Practices for Our Nervous Systems. I know I can use a lot of nervous system help. What about you? So I hope this has been helpful, my friends. See you on the next episode.
Hey, amazing educators, thanks for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love for you to hit subscribe and leave a review. Even better, share this episode with a colleague. And hey, I'd love to connect with you on social media. You can even join my Facebook group for some extra support and a dash of inspiration. I've left all the links in the show notes. Until next time, my friend, remember, you're not alone on this journey. You've got this. Keep making a difference and stay teach-tastic.